Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drinks Show this week. Friends, as always, got a really good show coming up for you here today. Our featured interview is with Jason Johnston Ellen, who is the co-proprietor of Single Cask Nation. They are an independent bottler that bottles whiskeys, lots of scotches in particular, and they work with different distilleries to source things and give you an expression that maybe you've not tried before. And a lot of these are very, very small production stuff. So we chat with him about what they do, and we also chat with him a little bit about what being an independent bottler in the whiskey world means. So we'll get over to that in just a second. Then the last segment of the radio portion of the show, anyway, is over at Two Jags. Yep, the second oldest restaurant here in New Orleans, established in 1856. And they are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the famous Grasshopper cocktail that was invented right there in that very spot. So we join them in that celebration. We have an interview with Mark Ladder, the proprietor of Two Jags. We talk a little bit about the history of the restaurant, history of the drink. It's very cool. And then we head down to the bar where my good buddy Cameron, one of the bartenders there, gives us a demo on how to actually make a grasshopper. And we were in the bar, and the bar was hopping when we were filming this, so it's a little loud. We tried to clean up the audio, but it might be a little bit tough to hear. So what I'm going to do here in a second is I'm going to run down the recipe really quick, and then I'll do that again during the beginning of the podcast only portion of the show, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. So if you're listening on the radio, be sure to go to noladrinks.com, your favorite podcast network, and you can find the show there, and I'll run down the recipe again. Or here's an alternative for you, even better. Go to our Instagram channel at NOLA Drinks, our Instagram account, I should say. And we have an IGTV channel these days. That's right, Instagram TV. And we videoed the whole thing. So we have the interview with Mark that I just mentioned up there. We sat on the balcony overlooking Decatur at Two Jags, which was really cool. A lot of fun. And right below the super famous sign that they have there, it says Two Jags, established 1856. And then you can also see where we videoed the demo with Cameron in the bar making the drink. And we got little graphics there at the bottom of the screen that run down the recipe, and he's showing us. So it's a lot easier to see. It's a really easy drink to make. Very, very delicious. So yeah, I'll run it down here. I'll run it down at the beginning of the podcast, or just go to our Instagram account, click on the IGTV icon, and then you will see it there. But very quickly, the drink, if you want to make a proper grasshopper, the event was sponsored by Bowles, makers of fine liqueurs, Bowles, B-O-L-S. So you start with 1 ounce of Bowles Creme de Cacao White. They make a white clear version. Then you also go with a half ounce of the dark or brown version of Creme de Cacao. And then what you do is you go 0.25 ounces of Creme de Menthe Green. Same idea. They make a green one and a clear one. And then we do 0.25 ounces, quarter ounce of the white one. Then it is 2 ounces of whole whipping cream. Okay, don't skimp. Use whole whipping cream. You put that in a shaker filled with ice. You shake it up and you strain it into a champagne flute. Oh, and I forgot. I'm sorry. 0.25 ounces of brandy. Need that before you put it in the shaker. Then you shake everything up and then you strain it into a champagne flute. And what you can do that they do at Two Jags sometimes, we didn't show it in the demo, but here's a little secret for you. You can just do a little brandy float right on top. So once again, it is 1 ounce of Bowles Creme de Cacao White, half ounce of Bowles Creme de Cacao Brown or Dark, quarter ounce of Creme de Menthe Green, quarter ounce of Bowles Creme de Menthe White, quarter ounce of your favorite brandy, 2 ounces of heavy whipping cream, 2 ounces of heavy whipping cream. There you go. And put it into a shaker with ice, shake it up, strain it, give yourself a little brandy float if you want the insider's version of the grasshopper there. So, but yeah, go check out all that stuff, friends. Also want to mention very quickly that it is South African Wine Week starting this week on Thursday, November 7th, and runs through next week through November 13th. All kinds of great events going on where you can explore the world of South African wines. Go check out sawineweeknola.com. Once again, sawineweeknola.com. See listings of events. There's flights going on happening all week. There's specific events like tastings at bottle shops on a given evening. There's some food food stuff going on. There's some educational stuff going on. All kinds of really cool things to do to connect with the world of South African wines. Our good friend Jim Clark, who was on the show not too long ago, will be in town leading some of these different events. So it's a great, great opportunity to check stuff out. Again, sawineweeknola.com. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Then we're going to be over at Spirit Wine there on Magazine Uptown New Orleans. We're going to chat with Jason Johnston Ellen of Single Cask Nation. Come on back. Ideas here with the NOLA Drink Show. Hey, the second annual South African Wine Week returns to New Orleans from November 7th through the 13th. Explore this fascinating wine region, one of my favorites, that produces truly excellent wines all at a great value. Some of your favorite bars, restaurants, and bottle shops around the metro area will host dinners, happy hours, special tastings, and more. Join the conversation online using the hashtag SAWineWeek. To get more information and see event listings, visit sawineweeknola.com. Cheers, y'all. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Oh, yeah, we're about to get into a little bit of whiskey here, friends. Pleased to be chatting with Jason Johnston Ellen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me in New Orleans and for having me on the show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So welcome to New Orleans. You said that you actually hadn't been here other than passing through on an Amtrak about 20 years ago.
You're exactly correct. And I tell you, it looks a lot better today than it did then.
right on. I'm sure the whiskey helps.
You're exactly correct.
Well, great. So you do some interesting stuff here with Single Cask Nation. We're going to taste through some of the stuff that you guys produce. But also, you, like myself, get behind a microphone and pretend to know what the hell we're talking about. And you do a whiskey podcast.
You're exactly right. The tagline of our independent bottling company. So we're Single Cask Nation, One Nation Under Whiskey.
And that's the podcast.
And that's the podcast. Yeah. And it strikes me there's no better time to talk about uniting a nation. And what will we unite it under? Whiskey.
Yeah.
What do we have in common? Whiskey. So that's what we talk about on the podcast, and that's what I talk about in my business, traveling around representing my company, Single Cask Nation.
Yeah, that's cool. So how did you, people may guess by the accent that you are not originally from the U.S. Some of your countrymen are probably hearing the podcast, but you're originally from Scotland, correct?
I am. Mm-hmm. I am. I've lived in the U.S. since December of 2001.
Okay.
And so when I go home, everybody in my family, my friend circle, makes fun of my transatlantic accent. And so I love coming back home to America, where people tend to enjoy my Scottish accent.
That's very, very good. So are you being accused of it being watered down?
Very much so. Okay. Yeah, I had a great moment. I'd spent a week doing business with my partner, Joshua Hatton, and we'd had a great time, great week, gone all around Scotland, met a ton of people. We get back to Glasgow, where we often base ourselves out of. My brother comes up from Ayr in Ayrshire, where I was born and raised, and he walks into this bar, and my brother and I are talking to each other, and Joshua looks at me, and he says, I've spent a week with you, I've understood every word. For the last 30 seconds, I've no idea what you've said. And so it ramps up. It moves fast, swifter intonation on a lot of words. I've got this slowed down American version of my Scottish accent.
Okay, gotcha.
But I can ramp it up at any second when I get excited.
When you get excited. This is good for podcasts and good for film or something like that, if you can do that. I actually had a good friend of mine. This is not going to get too far off track here, but I used to teach scuba diving.
Fantastic.
This was in Honduras in this particular place. And a guy that I worked with, a fellow instructor, his name was Dougal, a countryman of yours.
Beautiful.
And it's a great name,
I've got two Dougals in my family.
Do you have two? Okay, classic name. And I tell you, when Dougal and I first started, we were taking our dive master class together. It took me a good several days. And he's my dive buddy, so there's life dependent factors on understanding what the hell comes out of Dougal's mouth. And it took me a while. I'm sure he said the same thing about me. So
probably called you a Yang Columbia as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit, Jason. We're going to talk about some different whiskeys. And one of the things that's interesting, the first one that we're talking about here is with your Single Cask Nation stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is not a single malt whiskey. It is a single grain whiskey.
Correct. For me, this is something of a forgotten category within the world of Scotch. What I like to say to people as I'm traveling around the US, though, is this is a mash bill that will contain corn, maize as we refer to it in Scotland, and wheat. Distilled in a column still, ramped up to distillate at 94.5% alcohol. If it got up to 95, it would be vodka.
Right.
But they get it up to 94.5, and then it goes into cask. For Invergordon, they cask at 71% alcohol. Industry standard for your single malts, you'll see 63.5%.
Okay.
So it's a higher level to mm-hmm. that, which is why you'll often find older versions of grain whiskey still have a high ABV on them.
Now, why do we want to take the temperature up that high? Is that to kind of, since we're dealing with a single grain, make it a little cleaner?
So that's your percentage of alcohol.
Yeah.
Clean is exactly the word.
Okay.
Basically, what you're creating is neutral grain spirit. I know a lot of Americans are familiar. Yeah. NGS.
Yeah.
What'll then happen is grain whiskey in Scotland will be used at a very young age, somewhere around 3 years of age. It'll have sat in a refill American bourbon barrel, American oak, for those 3 years. There's not a lot of color coming in from the barrel. There's not a lot of flavor coming in from the barrel. It just gets to sit. And then at 3 years old, it becomes about 70% of a bottle of blend.
Okay.
You're just using it to fill space. You're not looking for it to deliver flavors.
Okay.
You'll then use your malt top notes, your slightly more expensive malts. They'll be used in the blend to bring in flavors. So when you then take a cask of grain whiskey and let it sit, in this case, 43 years, the oak does just enough to give a bit of color on it. There's a decent color in that little bottle there.
Yeah, yeah.
Subtle amber color to that. That's your wood influence over those four decades. Once you put your nose in it, anything that comes out nice and sweet, anything that comes out like a baking spice, it'll be very subtle after that amount of time. That'll come from your cask as well. But it takes a good long time in quiet wood to have grain whiskey turn into something.
That's really interesting, Jason, because looking at it, as you said, it has a subtle color. So one would might be inclined to think that after sitting four plus decades in a barrel, it's going to look like, you know, like dark soup.
Exactly.
And it absolutely does not. So it's imparting a very subtle characteristic for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. If you imagine America, when Americans use their new charred oak, if you were to sit a new make spirit at 71% alcohol in new charred oak for four decades, it would be black as tar.
Yeah, and it would probably taste like it as well.
100%. 100%. But when you then incorporate the Scottish climate with a quieter cask and cask influence, now you've got something that will bring in color and flavor over a number of decades and be something you can still drink and enjoy.
It's very nice. And I'm getting, you know, you get those sort of nice caramel tones mm-hmm. on it that you would expect. You're getting some nice, I get some nice dried fruit notes on it that are really well balanced in this as well.
For me, it's the vanillins.
And yeah,
get a little bit of that vanilla ice cream building.
Yeah, there you go.
Like melted vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really warming. This was actually distilled the month I was born. This is June 1974 distillate.
Wow.
And when this sample came across our desk, obviously the date was very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
You then have to taste it. We give it the nose test. If it passes the nose test, we keep it. We move on to the palate.
Okay.
If it successfully passes that, we move on to the finish. And if it passes all three of those, then we bottle that cask.
Gotcha.
And so, yes, I was drawn in by the age of it. It then passed all three tests.
Okay.
And even everything we bottle for Single Cask Nation is natural cask strength. Some people will see this at 43.9.
Okay.
And think, oh, I've seen 43% whiskey on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And think, oh, you brought that down to 43. Nope. That was over those 43 years in wood, it went from 71% alcohol down to 43.9 through natural evaporation.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you keep your oils in it. That's why you still get a good mouthfeel from it.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
If you take some off-the-shelf whiskies at 43%, in my mind, that's 57% water.
Yeah, you start talking about flabby stuff there.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I can get water out the faucet.
Yeah.
I don't need to get water from a liquor store.
Yeah, right.
But in this case, natural evaporation, still good oils, and the oils bring the flavors, as you well know.
Yeah.
That's what I want on my palate, all of those flavors. And even at 43, still some nice flavor in there. It's not completely washed out after 43 years. And it's not crazy woody either.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's really cool.
So
let's taste one now, if you don't mind, real quick. And then we got about 3-4 minutes and we'll take a break. We can go a little bit longer than that probably. But so what are we tasting on this one, Jason?
So one of the things for us, we are independent bottlers in the Scottish tradition. So we want to take our brand, Single Cask Nation, and when we bottle a cask, we want the distillery name to be front and center on it. In the United States, independent bottling doesn't have the warmest tradition, the warmest feelings about that tradition, because a lot of barrels tend to disappear, and then they are reborn under new packaging, mm-hmm. with a new story, with a new marketing line attached to it, mm-hmm. and sometimes people feel they're being sold a bill of goods. So for us, this is from the Glenrothes Distillery. Glenrothes has been in the news recently because it's been reacquired by Edrington. The brand had been owned and operated by Berry Brothers and Rudd, an independent bottling company out of England, and now Edrington have taken it back. Glenrothes is known for having a good sherried profile. So rich, warm, dark fruits, real heavy caramel flavors, bit of spice going on in the background. For me, for Joshua, the role of an independent bottler is to show a different side of a distillery. So if you bring in Glenrothes that's known for its sherry profile, we've got a 20-year-old Glenrothes for you that spent all 20 years in a refill bourbon hogshead.
Okay.
Gives you a completely different view of that distillery. Mm-hmm. The color of it in the bottle is this kind of golden color instead of a dark ruby red color. Things are different. That's the realm that the independent bottler plays within. Natural cask strength, 52.9%.
Okay.
And then one of only 216 bottles.
Now, when you work with a distillery to do this, do they get excited about it because they actually get to show an expression that's a bit different? I realize it's not theirs per se, but, you know, they're doing something different.
Yeah, we go a couple of different ways. We have a lot of distillery direct relationships, as we call them, where we have gone in, we've established a relationship, they're selling cask directly to us. There's also a reality within the world of Scotch where whiskey brokers are purchasing large parcels of casks, basically sight unseen. They'll bring them into their warehouse, they'll taste through them, what can be resold as single cask, what would do much better going off to be blended.
Okay.
And so for us, this Glenrothes came from that secondary market.
Gotcha.
But to answer your question, with people like Glenmurray that we work with, Arran, Wild Turkey, Westland in Seattle, yes, they get very excited. It's a chance for them to show a different side of themselves.
Right.
They're responsible at all times for a distillery profile. When an independent bottler walks in, they say, well, we've got this that's really unique. We've no idea what to do with it. Mm-hmm. It might be ideal for you. And we say, I would love to taste it.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic.
And then like we're doing here, we then take on kind of the marketing for that distillery, but not marketing stories. We then get to say, this is a distillery that does X. This is how they distill. This is how they tend to mature. This is what their new make spirit tends to taste like.
Mm-hmm.
Now here, try our expression of it. If you like this, go and explore that distillery.
And see what else they do.
Yeah, buy some of their stuff.
Yeah.
It gives you a nice jumping off point. Just to say it very quickly, when I first started getting into single malts in the 90s, I didn't think I liked whiskey. I grew up in a blue-collar family, and it was the bottom-most shelf plastic jug blend that you would right. you would mix with water or 7-Up or ginger ale, something to make it disappear.
Yeah.
And so I never quite understood that, hey, single malt scotch is really, really good. And then it was once I was at the Aberdeen Society, University of Aberdeen Whiskey Society, I thought independent bottlers were a bit of a knockoff. It struck me you could either buy the Rolex, a Macallan, a Highland Park, a Laphroaig, direct from them, or you could buy the knockoff Rolex, the independently bottled Laphroaig, Highland Park. Mm-hmm. And it took me a good 5 years to realize they're actually doing different things.
Right.
The brand is in charge of a presence, a distillery style.
The consistency, which is required 100%. With that type of drinker. Right?
100%. 100%. Yeah. An independent bottler is just pulling unique moments in time out of warehouses and sharing that with a fan base to say, hey, you love your Laphroaig? I know I do. Here's a different side of that. Here's something even fresher. Here's something even more coastal. And I think that's how brands and independent bottlers live well in harmony. Each one feeds off of the other.
It gives the consumer and an enthusiast another opportunity to see something from a different angle, as you've well said.
Exactly.
Well, let's do this, Jason. We're going to take a little break here on the show, and we're going to come back, taste a couple more things, talk a little bit about your podcast, and you're going to stick around for the podcast-only portion we do, another shot with Nola Drinks, and probably talk about the industry or geek out on something. I don't know. We'll talk about something. We're drinking whiskey. I mean, what can really go wrong here, friends? We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Friends, come on back.
Goodbye, Joe. I got to go. Me oh my.
Is here with you. Yeah, we're chatting with Jason Johnston Ellen, who is with Singlecast Nation as well as One Nation Under Whiskey podcast. And you guys, we were just talking about it. I've had my own gig for about 2 years doing this on the radio and podcast. And you guys, you and your partner Josh, have been doing it for about 2 years as well.
You're exactly right. Yeah. And time has flown. I hope the same is true for you as well.
Yeah, most of the time.
Maybe we drink more than you. I don't know your backstory.
I don't know about that. But so how, tell us about the podcast. You have all kinds of, you obviously talk about the stuff that you all do, but then you have different, I was looking at some of the episodes that you have, and you get some, and let's be clear too. We've been talking about Scotch here a little bit and stuff like that, but we're talking about the broader world of whiskey. You get bourbon people on, you get Scotch people on, you get American whiskey people on,
correct,
all kinds of stuff.
Correct. And we've really bottled across the gamut. We've bottled Irish, Indian, Scottish, English, and American, mm-hmm, bourbons and ryes, and American single malts.
Yeah.
And so we've built up a lot of friends along the way. And just as you and I have been doing today, we're chilling off air, we're chatting away, we're having a good time. We wanted to bring those conversations to a listenership, to fans of Singlecast Nation, for people that we meet on the road who like having conversations with us. We wanted them to hear that story as well. So we try to do independent bottling conversations, but you can't just make a podcast that goes out every 2 weeks on the back of independent bottlers.
It's a big world, but it's not that big.
And so oftentimes when Joshua and I are in Scotland meeting producers, we'll ask, hey, can we spend some time talking with you on wax, as we like to call it, mm-hmm, and then present that to our audience. And if we've got new releases coming, sometimes that becomes a focus with the producer that we'll purchase that from. And so there's a number of different ways to do it. We want to start talking to some of the bars that we've partnered with since 2011, 2012. There's so much to talk about, so much to cover, and it's an ever-evolving industry. The big topic of conversation right now, we're involved in this big bubble, and a lot of producers don't want to call it a bubble, but I call it a bubble. So we're in the middle of this big bubble right now. What do they see? Where do they see this going? Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated by the conversations they're having internally, upstairs, with their workforce, with their buyers. What's that look like? And so
we know the boom and bust the industry, especially in the bourbon industry in particular,
right,
has gone through. And so everybody, especially that late 60s, early 70s,
yep,
bust, right? Everybody is still that's involved in the industry. A lot of them were around for that.
Exactly.
And everybody's a bit gun shy. Now you can't let it happen again.
Exactly. Well, and for us in Scotland, we also had it in the 80s. So we had one in the 60s,
yeah,
one
okay
in the 80s.
Yeah.
We're now 30 years into this, mm-hmm, since the kind of the new rise in the 90s. It has to come. We have to see it. And so we want to chart that a little bit. We feel like we're in a privileged position where we've got these access points. Why not listen to their, you know, ideas on the industry? Why not listen to where they think the industry's going? And that's what we do. And it's a very natural conversation. It's a fun conversation. And we're learning, and our listenership is listening as well. And I love that. I love being part of that.
It's a good part of doing this, isn't it, Jason, is that you actually get the opportunity, just like from yourself, I learn every time I do the show, almost without exception.
Absolutely.
I learn something.
Absolutely.
And it's really a fun part. I get exposed to lots of things that I wouldn't normally be exposed to. And all that. So where do people find the podcast if they're interested in checking that out?
Everywhere you find your podcasts.
Okay.
iTunes is always the anchor point.
Yep.
But then everything off the back of that. Anywhere you get a podcast, you can listen to One Nation Under Whiskey. I give all credit to Joshua. He has led the charge on where we are available. He's led the charge on our editing. He's led the charge on purchasing our equipment. One of the things that we joke about internally is we're actually a whiskey business that creates money just so Joshua can buy equipment for the podcast. It doesn't come cheap, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're forever buying new things, new toys for Joshua to play with. And so that's where our money goes now. We just don't talk about profits anymore. We just talk about podcasting equipment.
Yeah, it's merchandise, right? It's assets. You list that on a ledger as an asset. Physical assets. asset, I think. Right, I'm not an accountant, so whatever. So let's talk about this one that we're tasting, because yes. This is very interesting and very nice.
Yeah, what I wanted to do for you here, so we had single grain, we moved into single malt from Glenrothes, and now I wanted to give you a single malt, but it's peated. But it's not your normal peat. One of the things I encounter flying around the nation, doing tastings, talking to people, number of people come up and say, oh, Jason, I don't like peated whiskies. Oh, the smoky, dirty ones. I just don't like them. And so what we have in front of us here is a Crofton Gaea. And so this is actually produced from barley that was peated with Highland peat. Malted with Highland peat.
Okay.
So whereas for a lot of people that have experienced Isla peat, that's the seaweed, that's decomposed seaweed. When you deal with Highland peat, you're dealing with decomposed heather. And the heather will give you a sweetness, it'll give you a floral component that an Isla peat is not going to give you.
Interesting.
And so I really wanted you to have that opportunity. This comes from the Loch Lomond Distillery. They've got about 14 different configurations with their stills, and they go all the way from a non-peated release called Inchmurrin all the way to a heavily peated release called Crofton Gaea.
Okay.
So even if listeners haven't heard of Crofton Gaea, my hope is they've heard of the Loch Lomond Distillery. Mm-hmm. A little tidbit that I quite enjoy. My eldest kid is a big fan of Tintin. And when Hervé was writing Tintin in the 40s, the Captain Haddock was a big fan of whiskey. And so Hervé wanted to have Captain Haddock drinking the most Scottish-sounding whiskey he could have. So Captain Haddock drinks Loch Lomond whiskey.
Okay.
The Loch Lomond Distillery wasn't built until the middle of the 60s. And so I told my kid, do you know we're actually going to bottle a Loch Lomond? And he said, oh, Captain Haddock's favourite. and I said, absolutely. And do you know that there was no Loch Lomond when Hervé was writing that?
No way.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
If you don't know Tintin, you may know it as Tintin, as some people call it as well, but it's a very famous comic French comic. Well, I was married to a French woman my first marriage, and that's how she pronounced it.
Tintin. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. That sounds like something from the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, it does sound like something from the Lone Ranger. Well, cool. So this is a really nice one. Let's get one more expression. We got about 2.5 minutes left, Jason.
Yeah. Perfect. So now that I've treated you to Highland peat, let's do the comparison here with Isla peat.
Okay.
And so now, while the Crofton Gaea was 10, and it was a second fill bourbon cask maturation, now when we move into this undisclosed Isla, as I was starting to tell you earlier, we like, in the Scottish tradition, to put a distillery name on the front of our label. Sometimes the distiller or the conglomerate selling you the cask does not want the name to be on the label. Mm-hmm. So we've got this as undisclosed Isla.
Okay, gotcha.
It's a large distillery on the north shore of Isla, owned by a massive conglomerate. So any whiskey lover has probably got it narrowed down at this point.
Okay.
but 9 years old, a natural cask strength of 58.4% alcohol, and now you get a bit of that medicinal Isla peat going on in here. This distillery is known for having tall stills that they fill to a low level. What that allows for is more reflux. So as your condensing spirit is becoming liquid, it's falling back into the boil. So those heavier phenolic compounds are being redistilled. So even though it's an Isla peated whiskey, you get something quite sophisticated about it, quite clean to it.
There's a very very nice mouthfeel and smoothness to this too. It's very round. It's a bit oily and in a very nice way.
And that's key for us. That's one of the other tests we mentioned earlier. We're looking at nose, we're looking at palate, we're looking at finish, we're also looking at texture, mouthfeel. Is it full? Do you feel it on your tongue? Does it build on your lips? Does it build on the inside of your mouth? And when you're dealing with higher strength whiskies, if you've got good oil presence in there, you won't feel that whiskey burn that a lot of people talk about. It'll guide that ethanol right across your taste buds with all that oil,
palate,
but it'll deliver flavor instead of delivering the alcohol.
Got it. Let's do this, Jason, because we got to take a break here in about 20 seconds. Tell people really quickly about the website, singlecastnation.com. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. Okay. Singlecastnation.com. We have an online component where we ship direct to doorsteps. Those are completely different casks than we make available in retail, which you buy it off the shelf, you take it home, you enjoy it.
Okay, great. And you can get the podcast there too. You're going to stick around for another shot with Noah Drinks, and we're going to taste a little more. But friends, we're going to take a little break here on the radio portion of the show. Then we're going to be back with a special feature on the 100th anniversary of the Grasshopper at Two Jags. Oh yeah, come on back. Brian Diaz here with the Noah Drink Show. Hey, the second annual South African Wine Week returns to New Orleans from November 7th through the 13th. Explore this fascinating wine region, one of my favorites, that produces truly excellent wines all at a great value. Some of your favorite bars, restaurants, and bottle shops around the metro area will host dinners, happy hours, special tastings, and more. Join the conversation online using the hashtag SAWineWeek. To get more information and see event listings, visit SAWineWeekNOLA.com. Cheers, y'all. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be, and also right here on IGTV, our Instagram channel at Noah Drinks. We are sitting here on the balcony of Two Jags overlooking Decatur Street, second oldest restaurant in New Orleans, established in 1856, and I'm pleased to be joined by my good friend and proprietor, Mark Ladder. Mark, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thanks, buddy. We're really excited here because coming up in the month of November, where we are, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Grasshopper, the famous cocktail invented right here in this very spot.
We're going to take the entire month of November and celebrate the 100th anniversary, like you said. 1918, Philip Guiche went to New York in a cocktail competition. After creating the drink here in the bar in New Orleans at Two Jacks, brought the recipe to New York and won second place in a cocktail competition.
That's pretty cool. So we were talking about that before we went on the air. And so he had invented the drink here. Was it a short time before that, or do we really know kind of the...
I was really young in 1918.
You were, so you weren't here. You did hang around here when you were a kid, though, when your dad had the place and your uncle had the place, right? Yeah, so then he took it up to the cocktail competition, came back, and then did that get it some notoriety going on just sort of around, and that's sort of what made it a drink of renown?
You know, I believe when people come into a bar like Two Jacks that's been open for so long, they come in and say, what's your original cocktail? And it just picked up pace, and people started ordering them, and it became really famous.
Yep. And it's been on the menu ever since?
Right? Ever since.
So one of the things here, friends, in New Orleans is that, you know, we have some restaurants that have been here for a long time, especially when we look at the United States, long-running restaurants. Let me not give this short shrift. Two Jags has been here since 1856, and again, the second oldest restaurant in town. It's very important, Mark, that the restaurant has stayed, different families, right, but stayed as a family-run restaurant.
So, right, absolutely. Since 1856, it's had three families, two generations each family. The Two Jacks family had two generations, the Guiches, which Philip Guiche was part of that,
yep,
who invented the Grasshopper, as we spoke of, and then the Ladders. And so I'm the second generation Ladder.
So when the Ladders took over your family, that was your uncle and your dad, right?
Uncle and my father took it over in 1982.
Yep.
My father took it over from my uncle, say, about 1997. And then my wife and I took over in 2013.
Yeah, and it's really important because this is an iconic restaurant, friends, in New Orleans. And this will be a story for another time, Mark, probably. But when you and Candace, your lovely wife, stepped in to take over the place, this place was maybe not going to be here. And you guys really saved a piece of New Orleans tradition.
Yeah, my father did not have a lease. It basically was month to month. So when he passed away in 2013, it got a little chaotic. And then, you know, like yourself and the Brennans and the city kind of rallied behind us,
yep,
and convinced the landlord to give us a lease.
Yeah, and it's great. And it's been in this spot. It's a really fantastic place. Mark, let's talk a little bit about Two Jags, what y'all do here. How would we describe, we know the Grasshopper can be had here, and you should get one here, friends, but what kind of food do y'all serve here?
I say traditional Creole.
Okay.
You know, since we're the second oldest, it's really hard to get too out of the box here. You know, but really you can come in and get anything you want. We have steak, pork, fish. We specialize in local seafood. There's only local seafood on the menu.
Yeah, the seafood here is fantastic. I want to make sure that we highlight the brisket because you know me and you know how much I love the beef brisket and the beef brisket po' boy.
So the brisket's been on the menu since 1856.
Has it? Okay,
literally.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Literally. So from 1856 up until 2013, it was a set five-course meal, table d'hote. And that was the only option you had. And brisket was on that menu from the start of the restaurant.
Wow. I didn't know that part. It wasn't new that I discovered the brisket then, is what you're saying.
No, everybody knows about the brisket.
Everybody knows about the brisket. Yeah. I'm a little slow on the uptake, friends. But you guys recently, Mark, brought in, you have a new chef here.
We do. We're very, very excited. Yeah. Thomas Roby spent 26 years at Commander's Palace. And that restaurant knows a thing or two about running a restaurant.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're...
And so Thomas has been here for, as people are hearing this, about 2 months, right? 3 months? Does that sound about right?
He's going on about 4 or 5 months.
Four or five months.
We just put out his first full menu.
That's great. And that's exciting, huh?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. He's doing an amazing job.
People have been raving.
So happy to have him.
That's great. People have been raving about the food here and what Thomas has done. And he's a good guy, too. So come check him out. Let's talk a little bit about the bar program, Mark. So aside from the Grasshopper, the iconic drink that we're celebrating here, how else would we describe the bar program? I mean, this is a great place to come get the classics, right?
So you have a cocktail craze, right, around the country, especially sure. New Orleans, which a lot of us think it started here in New Orleans. We stick
I'm going to say it's the original craft cocktail town.
We stick with the classics.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have eyedroppers. We don't, it's really, we do La Louisiane's, we do Sazeracs. Of course, we have the Grasshopper. We pretty much, Ramos Gin Fizz.
Yeah.
I think we're one of four bars in the city that still do a Ramos Gin Fizz.
Yeah, and like the right way, right?
The right way,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
So we pride ourselves on being classic.
I think that's an important part of the program here because this is one of my favorite places to come. And certainly there's some new cocktails on the menu and things like that, good wine list, good beer list. But if I actually want, I know when I walk into Two Jags, if I order a Sazerac, I'm going to get it done right and done well. And it may sound kind of simple, friends, that getting a Sazerac is, you know, people should be able to make it all over New Orleans, and one would think they do. But making it right is actually pretty tough, and you guys do a good
one. It's like gumbo. Everywhere you go, it's a little different.
Yeah, but there's a fine line and set of parameters, right, with the Sazerac. If you can go off the rails pretty quickly with that cocktail.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, you need the rye whiskey.
Yeah.
You need to do the correct amounts of each ingredient.
Absolutely. Right amount of simple syrup. You have to have that classic rinse,
exactly.
Right, with the absinthe
absolutely.
Or with the herb saint in there. So, Mark, as we move here into the fall, what are we going to be looking for? The first menu that Thomas put out, anything new we want to be? I know it's a classic restaurant, so things don't change a whole lot, but he's kind of tweaked things and tweaked some of the presentation on the menu, hasn't he?
He has. He actually changed the presentation of the brisket.
Oh, okay.
He has. So the brisket is always, essentially, it's a pile of meat. You know, boiled beef brisket.
You have me right there.
Some potatoes and some veggie. And he is actually, you know, I kid around with all my other restaurateur friends and friends, how can you make brisket fancy? And he has actually taken that dish, plated it differently, pretty much the same ingredients, and just made it look a lot nicer.
Yeah, okay, cool. And does he bringing in some seasonal stuff, right, for some of the sides and things like
yeah.
that?
I mean, he's bringing in items like pork cheeks and, you know, a lot more duck.
Now, there's one dish on the menu here, and we got about a minute, Mark, before we close out. I don't want you to tell people where Two Jags is and such, but the chicken bon fond, huh?
So that's the best-known secret in the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, I just kind of blew that open,
didn't I? It's pan-fried garlic chicken, parsley potatoes, and a little bit more garlic, and a little bit more garlic.
And a little more garlic after that.
It's not on the menu because we can't produce enough of it fast enough for everybody to order it, but it's... We almost sell out of chicken on a weekend basis.
Yeah, it's an amazing dish, friend. So if you want to act like you're in the know and you come to Two Jags, you can always check that dish out. Well, Mark, do me a favor. We got just a few here. Tell people where they can find Two Jags, street address, and online and all that good stuff.
So we're 823 Decatur Street, corner of Madison and Decatur. You can't miss our big neon sign or multiple neon signs.
I think it's the one right behind us.
TwoJagsRestaurant.com. You can take a look at this 1856 here right behind us.
We weren't lying. It's on the sign. Yeah, very cool place. Friends, come check it out. Great bar, great restaurant. Come check out and celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Grasshopper. You will not be disappointed. Friends, hey, we're going to go down to the bar, and Cameron's going to show us how to make a proper Grasshopper that you can do at home and honor the legacy here at Two Jags, friends. All right, everybody. Hey, we're here with Cameron Vile, bartender at Two Jags, the second oldest restaurant in New Orleans, as you know. And he's going to show us how to make a classic and proper Grasshopper. Cameron.
All right. Pretty easy, delicious dessert. So you can take 1 ounce of white cream and cacao. Take a half an ounce of dark cream and cacao. All right. Quarter ounce. Of a green event.
That's giving us our color that we want, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
A quarter ounce white green event. And about a quarter ounce.
Right. There's our little bit of kick that we need on a Grasshopper.
This is crucial. Heavy whipping. Don't skimp.
So no half and half, no skim milk, no 1%, full Monty, man.
2 ounces of it, do it. It's a dessert drink.
Just drink it.
No, no skim milk. No.
There is no such thing as a diet grasshopper, friends, nor should there be.
Don't even try.
Shake it up.
Shake it. Oh, I picture it.
Good color. Grasshopper. Thank you, Cameron. Friends, there is a classic grasshopper right here at Two Jacks just for you. Thanks for tuning into the show this week. Remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until then, cheers, y'all. Everybody, hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in to the Nola Drinks show in general this week, friends. Yeah, real quick, I mentioned this at the top of the show, and if you were just listening to the end of what was the radio portion and that part of the podcast portion, we did the cocktail demo of how to make a grasshopper as we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the grasshopper there at Two Jags, and I mentioned it's a little hard to hear. The bar was hopping. It was hopping. It was a lot more crowded than we expected it to be. And so it was a little loud in there. And I know it might have been a little hard to hear what Cameron was saying when he was making the drink. We did kind of run that portion through a noise reduction thing. That's why it sounded kind of weird. That wasn't me using pitch correction or a vocoder, even though I probably need that help. But it did make it so you could hear him a little bit better and what he was actually talking about, how he made the drink. But as I did at the beginning of the show, I'm going to run that down, that recipe down for you right now. So the grasshopper, as it's made there at Two Jags, is a 1 ounce of Bull's Cream Creme de Cacao White, the clear one, a 1/2 ounce of Bull's Creme de Cacao Brown, that's the dark one, helps out with the color, 0.25 ounce Creme de Menthe Green, and there you go, there's the real part that helps out with the color, 0.25 ounces of Creme de Menthe, white or clear, 0.25 ounces of brandy of your choice, 2 ounces of heavy whipping cream, and as we were saying, don't use half and half, don't use 2% milk, don't use skim milk, it's heavy whipping cream is needed for the consistency, and it is not a diet drink. As we noted, what you want to do then is you take a shaker, fill it up with ice, pour all that mixture in there, that recipe that I just gave you in there, shake it up and strain it into a champagne flute. And the one thing that you can do too is you can add a little float of brandy, which is actually what they do when you get it served in the bar there at Two Jags. So that's how you do it. And you might be asking yourself, why do you use the creme de cacao, the clear one, and the creme de menthe clear one, along with the two versions that have coloring? And that's because you kind of want that muted grasshopper looking green. If you use all green and all brown, you're not going to get that really brilliant hue of the color of the drink. So that's actually why they do it that way. Basically, the taste profiles are the same of the two liqueurs. It's just getting that color to look really good. And we know presentation is important, right? But friends, I hope you also enjoyed our featured interview with Jason Johnson yelling there of Single Cask Nation and also One Nation Under Whiskey, the podcast. And we're going to bounce right back over to Spirit Wine. Special thanks to them for hosting us there on Magazine Street, Uptown New Orleans, and continue our conversation with him. We're going to talk a little bit about what really being an independent bottler in the whiskey world means and how that business works. If you're into that kind of stuff, which I am, and I think a lot of you are, it's a really, really interesting bit of insight into that part of the industry, which you may not be familiar. Then I'll be back with my parting shot right after that. Here we go. Yeah,
friends, here we are in another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. And I want to give a special shout out to our friends here at Spirit Wine, a very, very fine wine shop here at 3500 Magazine Street, run by Daryl, a good man, and a good place to come and explore spirits and wine. They got a great selection, and they're hosting us here in their little sitting area. And I'm chatting with Jason Johnston Ellen, who is with Single Cast Nation and also One Nation Under Whiskey podcast, where fellow talkers online. And so we're going to talk about, we're doing this segment also on IGTV, Jason, so feel free to look at the camera or not.
Oh gosh,
you don't have to. But we're going to talk about, kind of focus on some industry trends going on. We were talking a little bit in the last segment about the bit of a bubble going on, and there's always sort of an ebb and flow when you're making a product that needs to be aged and supply and price and
exactly
so on. But what are some of the general trends that you're seeing in the broader whiskey world? I know it's a big question.
Yeah, right? Yeah. To take you back to 2011, when Joshua and I first launched Single Cask Nation, and we knew we wanted to be an independent bottler in the Scottish tradition, we needed to start sourcing casks. We'd both been blogging up to that point. We'd made a number of industry contacts. And so we used them to start acquiring mature casks that we were cherry picking to go into bottle. And we knew at that point, if we can keep this company afloat for 5 years on limited availability to stocks, because as you rightly point out, at that point, distillers were about maybe 6 years, 5 years, 6 years into realizing they were behind. Mm-hmm. Global demand was outstretching the availability of product. And as you say, you have to age it. You can't just make it today and sell a 10-year-old tomorrow. Doesn't work that way.
Generally, I have to wait 10 years, don't you?
You're a smart man. Although in some cases, distillers were actually putting 15-year-old and 18-year-old product into 10-year-old bottles for a 10-year-old price point that they could actually fill. And so there were some killer bargains
to be
found.
So they were digging into the back stock just to keep up with the demand at that price point.
100%. Yep. 100%. Okay. So we knew, okay, 5 years, we can stay afloat here. 5 years was pretty much the high watermark for some of the brands realizing we're now outproducing the demand. Demand isn't quite growing the way we anticipated, and we started to see ever more casks coming onto the market, coming through brokers, those large parcels that we talked about becoming available. We then started to watch, 2017 into 2018. Now what we're seeing is the blends that are the bread and butter for a number of large conglomerates, not naming names, not naming brands, but the blends that are the bread and butter are now starting to slow down, and in some cases, numbers are stagnating. They're still selling millions of cases globally. The numbers are still astronomical, but for their minds, and ever, they want demand to keep going.
To keep going.
Right? They want to keep rising.
Yeah.
They're now seeing the numbers stagnating. Casks that are now 10 years old that they've been sitting on to go into a blend, they're now becoming available as well.
Okay, interesting.
And so we're now seeing hundreds, thousands of casks becoming available as that global market doesn't quite respond the way that large conglomerates expected it to respond.
So this is, it's really interesting. So this sort of it's created a symbiotic relationship in a sense with you guys, because then what we're talking about is they're trying to avoid a glut, right?
Exactly.
So they're actually making stuff available through a different channel than what traditionally had been made available as a way to address that. And that creates a whole nother avenue then for whiskey enthusiasts to discover something different. It's really fascinating.
Exactly. Mark Watt, who's a global managing director for Cadenheads in Campbelltown. Cadenheads independent bottler is celebrating its 176th anniversary this year.
Wow.
It's a long story tradition. And one of the things Mark Watt says is in boom times, independent bottlers are a bane in the side of distillers. And in times of slowdown, they are the best friend of the distillers. And we have lived a little bit. We're only, 2011 on this. We've already seen this in our short history.
Yeah.
That we're now getting to this point where distillers are saying, hey, you want some casks?
Yeah, you want to come over and drink?
Absolutely. Right? Where 5-6 years ago, they were like, away you go. Away with you. We have absolutely nothing to offer you. And so it's really interesting being in the midst of that, partly being able to predict it, partly watching the marketplace and seeing where we're going with that. The big thing that we're seeing right now as an independent bottler in the industry is more casks are becoming available, but there's still enough demand that producers are saying, you can have the casks, but you can't use the name.
Yeah.
And that really flies in the face of what we've been talking about today about what an independent bottler is about in Scotland. Mm-hmm. We want the distillery name front and center. So now we're watching, what will it look like over the next 3 years, over the next 5 years? Will they relax the use of names? And I think they have to.
And that's because, what you're saying is when they feel that they're more pressured to get rid of something, then they're going to be more likely to allow the name to be used.
Exactly. Right now, they're still concerned that if a distillery X, if an independent bottler takes it away and sticks it into a really crummy port cask or a port pipe and something crummy comes out the end of that, if that bears Distillery X's name, the conglomerate thinks that reflects poorly on
right.
the distillery,
which is
on the producer.
That's true, right?
Right. You could say, you ever had Distillery X? Oh, yeah, I had it once. It was terrible. Never tried it again. Yeah. So they're afraid of that. But if you reach a point where your shareholders need to see profits at the end of the year, you better believe that they'll take off some of the shackles.
Right.
So that's what we're watching
right
now.
You can age it in a plastic bucket if you want at that point, right?
Exactly. And that's how you started to see, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you would see Ardbeg in the open market. You would see Lagavulin being sold in the open market. These are distillers who have now completely disappeared from independent bottlings across the world. You'll start to see those names come
those
back.
Names will come
but it'll
back,
be
yeah.
it'll be 10 years down the line, 15, 20 years down the line. That'll be how that independent bottling market will catch up with the glut of casks that now exist in Scotland.
It's a very tricky game. It's very interesting because I'm learning a lot from you on this. It's a very yin-yang kind of situation.
Spot on.
Of the way that you guys actually need to play this.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is why when we walk in the door of a distiller, we say, listen, allow us to pay you to be your marketing wing.
Mm-hmm.
Allow us to go around America pouring your distillery product, talking about your distillery, telling people to buy your distillery off the shelves, telling people to come visit you in Scotland. We can be your marketing wing, and we will pay you for the privilege.
Yeah, right.
And so we take that responsibility very seriously. It's one of the questions people ask us, why would a distiller sell you a good cask? Wouldn't they want to put a good cask into their bottle with their label? Well, the truth of the matter is a distiller has a lot of good casks.
Yeah, I was going to say they already do.
right.
Let's do this. We've got about 2 minutes left,
sir.
Jason. Let's pour something here. We got a couple minutes before we sign off this IGTV portion. But we've been talking about this, and we've been tasting before, but I was getting a little thirsty because we weren't tasting right now. So.
You and me both, brother. It'd be three minutes since the last dram.
What are we tasting here?
Cheers.
Cheers.
So here... And this is perfect timing. So we're just talking about great casks becoming available, but the names not being used. There's a prime example. This is what we're calling our undisclosed spacite. So we can give the region, we can give the cask information. This was 28 years in a refill, Oloroso sherry butt.
Okay.
So it's got this lovely red, this dark amber color to it.
Get that oxidative note.
Suggesting that sherry component, right? Natural cask strength, 54.3% alcohol. And this is the world of the independent bottler. This is one of our largest bottling numbers to date, an outturn. This is 488 bottles.
Okay.
If you're Johnny Walker, you're making 100,000 bottles at a time. If you're Laphroaig 10, you're producing 30,000 bottles at a time. If you're an independent bottler, 488 bottles is a huge outturn for us.
Right.
And this one, I'm happy to say, has now sold out nationwide. It's on some shelves in some other states, but from our warehouse, we have none of this available anymore.
Okay.
So give that a quick little nose.
I love it. I love this style. I do. I'm a big sherry fan, so aging stuff in sherry casks to me is a really nice way to go about stuff.
And for this distillery... a big malty profile to it. And big malty profile, all coming from that barley, even after 20 years in cask, marries beautifully with Oloroso sherry.
Yeah.
So you get a sweetness, you get a warmth, you get a cereal component to it, and then natural cask strength of that 54%, you still get that nice alcohol, you still get those good oils, you still get those good textures.
It's not overwhelming with the oxidative note either. And I like what you said, because that finish has that nice, those nice baking spice kind of chocolatey notes at the end.
Which is coming from your cask. That's what I always remind people. You know you've got a good cask when you can taste ingredients from the baking cupboard.
That's it.
Right? That's all come from the cask.
Let's do this, Jason. We're going to sign off this portion of IGTV, but you're going to stick around. We're going to taste like maybe one more thing and
awesome.
Hang out and talk a little bit more on Another Shot with Noel Drinks. But hey, IGTV, we'll see you later. All right, cool. So this
beautiful.
Is we're continuing on. We're going low tech. So you know, like I told you, I don't like to edit, but this is really really nice. So we're still sticking around here, our friends on Another Shot with Noel Drinks, as you can hear.
It's getting busy in here.
It's getting busy, and so I know we got to get you over to a tasting and taste some of these expressions. But this one's really fun, man. I'm digging this one.
Yeah, cheers. We absolutely loved it when we tasted it. It's a distillery that I've always been fond of, and it's a distillery that doesn't tend to have its own releases. And so again, the role of the independent bottler, either it's a peek behind a curtain, or it's exposing the consumer to a distillery they can't taste any other way. We bottled a Glenelgin, also in the Diageo stable, goes into the White Horse blend.
Okay.
Glenelgin does not have an official bottling from the distillery, but you will find multiple independent bottled Glenelgins.
Interesting.
So again, it's a completely different business to what a distillery is doing.
Mm-hmm.
For Diageo, they need the Glenelgin to go into their blend. That's the important part for them. For independent bottlers, we want an interesting quality spirit that we can share with fans of Single Cask Nation.
Yeah. Now, do you guys bring the stuff in, Jason? So you bring it in as a cask, and then do you have your own bottling facility? How do you do this?
So I'm glad you bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
So by law in Scotland, mm-hmm. if we bottle
you
this
to bottle
out
it
of
in
Scotland,
Scotland, of course, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we cannot call this Scotch
yeah.
if we did not bottle it in Scotland.
Okay.
And all of our labels proudly say Scotch.
Yeah.
So yes, we have a bottling hall in Scotland. We select our casks, we move them to our bottling hall, they fill them, we then import through San Francisco, warehouse in San Francisco, and then get these bottles out to distributors across the US to then get onto retail shelves and onto bar and restaurant shelves. And it's a wonderful industry. It really is. You know, you and I hadn't met each other before today, and we can sit here and have this wonderfully pleasant conversation over whiskey, our experiences with it, the podcasting that we do about spirits, about drinks. This happens to me every day of my life.
Yeah.
I was through in Seattle. I went to Copperworks Distillery, and they're doing really interesting things as well. And the owner of Copperworks was up in the racks. He was going through casks, trying to find something interesting. He's been a brewer for 25 years. He's been a distiller for a further 5 years. And he looks down from the rack, and he says, "Jason, you've got a pretty good life." And I looked up, and I said, I do. I definitely do. But when somebody who's brewed for 25 years and distilled for 5 years tells you you're having a good life, you believe that
you
person.
Believe
you
that
listen
person.
To
yeah,
that
yeah,
person.
Right. And, got and, the right perspective, right?
And so it's a great industry full of great people. And the conversations that we get to keep having, the marketplace that we continue to keep watch, there's still going to be good spirit out there,
mm-hmm.
good whiskey going into casks, going into bottles. And I love having a responsibility there to keep getting good whiskey out to people. And it's hopefully free from marketing nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
That's the polite Scottish way of saying BS.
No, and we're on the podcast only portion, Jason, so you can just say bullshit here on this one if you want. There's no FCC consideration in this portion of the show. Well, great. Well, do me a favor, man. Tell people, once again, what is the website for both finding the whiskeys as well as finding your podcast?
Yeah, check us out, singlecastnation.com. That's where you can buy the online casts that are only available online. We also, on our blog there, post information about the upcoming retail releases. We also show where our distributors are across the U.S., so you can track us down to your particular state as well. We're then onenationunderwhiskey.com for the podcast. Find us at iTunes. Find us anywhere that you get your podcasts from. And listen to our nonsense on there. Joshua and I, my partner, we just sit back, we drink some whiskey, we talk about the industry, and we tell a few dick jokes along the way.
I like that. This is why we get along, because that's what we do on this show. It's not necessarily only about whiskey, but the general concept remains. So that's great, Jason. I really appreciate you taking some time and sharing some nice whiskeys and chatting about stuff. Pleasure to meet you.
Thanks a million for having me on. I really do appreciate it. And meeting you was a thrill, and having the conversation is always
likewise.
Wonderful.
Thank
cheers
you,
to
Jason.
You, my friend.
Cheers. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on Another Shot with Noel Drinks, and I'll be back with my parting shot. Want to give another shout-out real quick to Spirit Wine here, 3500 Magazine Street. Come see Daryl and check him out. Appreciate him hosting us. Be right back with the parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening in once again to the Noel Drinks Show this week. I appreciate it. As always, still crossing our T's and dotting our I's on next week's show, but it's going to be a good one, I hope, I think. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation there with Jason Johnson Yellen of Single Cask Nation, as well as One Nation Under Whiskey. A lot of fun. I found it very fascinating to talk about the independent bottling industry. I was not particularly aware of a lot of this. It works very differently than certain things, for example, in the wine industry, with which I'm very familiar, of, say, negociant wines and brokered wines and these sorts of things. This sort of yin and yang, I think, as we said here just in the Another Shot with Noel Drinks portion, this ebb and flow, if you will, of how supply works and demand works in the whiskey world, in particular with scotches, as we were generally talking about there, and how independent bottlers have this relationship that kind of fills the void and goes back and forth, and using that term again, ebbs and flows. I found that really, really interesting. And also to say that the whiskeys were quite delicious. I certainly did not complain about tasting, you know, 40-year-old whiskeys, of which only there are 300 bottles or thereabouts, whatever they were. But a really fun and interesting conversation there. And it actually, friends, leads me to the parting shot, as we always do here on the show. Something I was chatting with Jason about before we started taping, before we went on the air. We were talking about the, you know, different Facebook groups that are out there for enthusiasts and those in the industry. So aficionados, if you will. So there's a lot of, if you don't know, there's a lot out there that are for whiskey or beer or wine, bourbon. I mentioned whiskey already, but, you know, the different subgroups, if you will, of whiskeys that are out there. And one of the things that Jason said to me is he said he doesn't really participate in a whole lot of them anymore. And I was kind of wondering why. And he said, you know, because people are really mean sometimes in these groups and they'll tear people down. And what happens is lots of times that, you know, somebody who's new to the world of whatever it is that we're talking about here, you know, we'll just say whiskey in this example, that they'll say, hey, you know, post a picture of a bottle they just bought or a picture of a bottle and they're in the store contemplating buying and say, hey, I'm new to this. What do y'all think of this one? And they're looking for some guidance. They're looking for some insight. And then people will immediately jump in on the comments and tear them down and say, oh, you're stupid, or this is overrated, or you don't know what you're talking about, or how lame, and things like that, with just these sort of mean responses, which I think is probably a little bit of a commentary that we're not going to get into on the overall online world where you can just sort of, you know, hide behind a social media account these days. But there's a lot of mean stuff out there, and I'm picking on whiskey to a degree, but the same certainly, as I said, applies in wine, it applies in other spirits. Beer, you know, is a big one. Let me go back to this one. Wine is probably the granddaddy of them all, really, because when we talk about the snobbery that's gone on with wine for decades, has been present. It sort of reminds me, friends, of the old Catholic priests that centuries ago would give mass in Latin with their backs to the congregation. And no one spoke the language. That was not the vernacular. Sort of lording knowledge over people and saying things that only I can know. You know, I've done wine education for a long time. I think if you listen to the show, you know that. And this is something that I'm pretty familiar with. One of the things that I think is very important is to make things accessible. Look, overall, more whiskey, more wine, more beer, whatever we're talking about, drinkers are a good thing, right? Now, I know that some would argue that the idea of quote-unquote exclusivity is important. It works in lots of ways. It works for marketing. It works for product pricing. If you think this is the hot shit, then, you know, you can charge twice the amount or three times or four times the amount you should for it. Think all kinds of Napa cabs. Not going to name any, but there you go. We all like the idea of being an insider. And that sells. So I totally understand that. However, I think that there's a general idea here that we've been breaking bread and drinking some form of alcohol together communally for millennia. We've been sharing. Now, this is an oversimplification, absolutely. I'm not going to get into sociological issues here and other things, but sure, it is an oversimplification. But in general, I like the idea. The idea of sitting around a table and drinking together and eating together has generally held for a very, very long time. There is no quicker way to turn someone off to something than to berate them right out of the gate as they embark on their journey of exploration. Also, I think it's actually really fun and rewarding to turn somebody on to something new, you know, guide them as they push their boundaries and take steps into a much larger world. I find a lot of reward in that. I think it's maybe the inner teacher in me, something I used to do in different ways in the past. Think about this too. These things, you know, this idea that you are buying an exploratory bottle of alcohol, that can be a pricey endeavor. Wines aren't cheap. Whiskeys aren't cheap. Craft beers, even in a lot of ways, are not cheap. It can also be really time consuming. Not all of us have the budget or simply the time to dig into these things as much as others of us do. This is just an aside here, but I want to mention this as well. I've had plenty of conversations with certain whiskey aficionados that are quick to say, I don't know anything about wine. But they're very quick to pontificate, drop names about distillers, drop names about brands they've had, and generally act holier than thou in regards to whiskey. And they quickly change the subject from wine because it's not in their wheelhouse. Now, I think this is true of many folks with many subjects, many interests or hobbies. And to be clear, I've seen it from wine snobs, I've seen it from beer snobs, you name it. I'm not trying to pick on any group, but I am picking on that person. Sometimes the teacher needs to be taught, and frankly, shut the fuck up and listen sometime. You might actually learn something. If all you're doing is talking and changing the subject back to what it is that you think you know, your world is being very closed. Again, I think this applies in a lot of ways. I'm just talking about booze here right now, but let me digress. After we did our recent show with three great New Orleans chefs, this was the one from last week, if you remember, Frank Brightson of Brightson's, Philip Lopez, the executive chef there at the fabulous restaurant and famous restaurant Galatoire's, and Isaac Toops of Toops South and Toops Meadery, we talked about how they benefited from someone taking them under their wing as they worked their way up in the kitchen, and how it's important to pay that forward. This is something that we understand in New Orleans. It's something that has made the culinary tradition here a generational thing. It's something that's made the music here a generational thing. We've talked about this on the show before. A lot of people I know that play, younger folks or, you know, folks my age, middle-aged folks now, there you go, that play music, they maybe started playing here when they were 20 and they had somebody who was 50 or 60, somebody established as the guard, if you will, of the New Orleans music tradition, took them under their wing and taught them something. Sometimes it was tough love, but they taught them something. It's a generational aspect of paying it forward. Well, I actually think the same thing applies here to what I'm talking about for folks that are looking to explore something new in the world of drink. So if you're a bartender, if you're a sommelier, if you're a Facebook group, quote unquote, pundit, or anyone with some valuable knowledge to share, share it. Don't be that archaic Catholic priest that I was talking about. Transmit knowledge. Let others learn from your experience. Let others learn from the time and money that you've actually spent. It's kind of rewarding. Put things in friendly and constructive terms. Don't talk over people's heads and don't make fun of them for making mistakes or lacking certain knowledge. Also remember, things like this are subjective. Sometimes baby steps are needed before big leaps in taste. Again, there is truth in this in many other aspects of life. Can happen. It's just, you know, the simple willingness to explore new things. Can't expect somebody to go from 0 to 60 in no time. Sometimes they kind of got to get there. So maybe it isn't what they like right now. Maybe that goes too far down the road. But there are ways that people can explore the road and you can facilitate them exploring the road, moving forward and understanding how that can happen. But let me speak to the other side of this really quickly. Keep this in mind. If you are that person that is actually looking for input, some amount of humility is also needed. Don't be a know-it-all when you're not. Don't just say something like, ew, this is gross, or simply, I don't like that, as if it's some sort of blanket statement of truth and what comes out of your mouth is actually the gospel. If you give things a chance, you put in the work, you may come to dig it. If you come with open ears, open eyes, and an open palate, you may also find more folks in the know are willing to lend a hand with a smiling face or at least a happy face emoji on a Facebook post somewhere. Friends, that's our parting shot this week. Here's to you.